Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.
Mayors across New York State are the latest to express concerns about the bail reform and other criminal justice law changes that take effect in January. The mayors say they don't have the resources or the money to properly carry out the new laws. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
Beginning in January, cash bail will end for all misdemeanors and most nonviolent felony crimes in New York. There will also be changes to what's known as the discovery laws, and will now require prosecutors to disclose within 15 days all of the evidence against people accused of crimes. The New York Conference of Mayors is joining the state's DAs and sheriff's associations in voicing worries about the logistics of carrying out the new laws. Binghamton Mayor Richard David says his city currently does not have enough people to meet the new discovery disclosure timelines.
We do not currently have the staffing to meet the timeline that's in place right now.
Robert Kennedy, mayor of Freeport on Long Island and president of the group, says it's going to cost his village $2.2 million each year to comply with the 15-day requirement for the average 1,100 arrests that take place in Freeport each year. He says he'll need to add staff and upgrade antiquated technology to get all of the evidence to the prosecutors in time.
Every radio transmission and recording from the officers and transmissions from all 911 calls would be included. All body cameras. Freeport was the first police department to mandate the use of every patrol officer with a body camera. Every body camera from every police officer will then have to be downloaded from the cloud. If you have 12 or 15 officers at the scene, every one of those body cameras is going to have to be downloaded for discovery.
Kennedy says the increased staff, overtime hours for police, and software updates will add an estimated 5.7% spending increase to his budget. That's in a state where there's a 2% per year property tax cap. Polls show that most New Yorkers support the reforms. Advocates who worked for passage of the law, including Nicole Triplett with the New York Civil Liberties Union, says the municipalities and law enforcement groups are not taking into consideration other costs that the current laws bring. The present discovery laws have resulted in thousands of low-income people housed in local jails, often for months at a time, while they've awaited court action for nonviolent crime charges. Triplett says many who are jailed because they cannot meet bail, lose their jobs, and sometimes lose custody of their children because they're unable to support them.
The cost that people have historically borne from the system has been hugely expensive. And so I don't think that the cost that these folks are facing should be considered in a vacuum.
Triplett says the changes to New York's laws are within the normal range of statutes in other states. She says the state of Texas has successfully implemented similar discovery reforms. And the state of New Jersey eliminated much of its cash bail system in 2017 without a major increase in recidivism rates or failures to appear in court.
By passing it, we're not out of the norm. In fact, by not passing it, we were at the margins and we were ranked, you know, closer to the bottom of states who had, you know, provided access to evidence for defendants.
She says when the changes happen in January, New York will go from one of the worst states for discovery disclosure to one of the best. Binghamton Mayor David says despite what he says are the hardships involved, he intends to comply with the new laws. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan?
The North Country Congresswoman Elise Stefanik, a Republican, and the Times' Jesse McKinley, who we speak to fairly regularly around here, has written an article about it. Republican star emerged in the impeachment hearings. Democratic donors took notice after Stefanik's role in the impeachment hearings and questioning Marie Yovanovitch. Democratic donors piled on to her challenger, Tedra Cobb, and she raised $1 million fairly quickly.
They both got a lot of money. The Republican loyalists, the president is saying she's a star. The Democrats were infuriated and gave Tedra Cobb $1 million in 2 days, I believe. So it is going to be quite a fight. Now, it is a red district. In other words, it's been drawn to help the Republicans. And whether or not that can be overcome is anybody's business. It's going to be a pretty good indicator of just how unpopular Trump has become, not only among Democrats, but among others, including the folks who are purples, in other words, in the middle. You know, my feeling is that that seat could go Democratic if Trump proves to be as unpopular as I think he is, not only among Democrats, but among Republican rank-and-file voters. Certainly, there's no indication that in the United States Senate, the Republicans are making any changes in their position yet. But if the constituents signal that they are sick and tired of all of this nonsense, there could be a change among the senators, and there's a very, very outside chance that he could be convicted once the impeachment goes forward to a trial.
Alan, a group of 39 Democratic state lawmakers, 17 senators, and 22 assembly members in New York have asked the Public Campaign Finance Commission, tasked with rewriting New York's campaign laws to establish lower contribution limits, create oversight outside of the State Board of Elections, and maintain the current system empowering minor political parties. And we're confident, they say, that the goals we've set forth for the commission and the statute will lead to the model for the nation the governor has promised. The lawmakers' letter states, however, we also take seriously our statutory responsibility to craft and sponsor legislation to act in December if needed. Sounds like they are ready to act if they don't get what they want. Of course, this all involves something called fusion voting.
Well, that's right. Fusion voting is what we call a poison pill, David. This commission was set up so that there would be public financing of elections. We have it in New York City. It's working terrifically. There's a question as to whether it should have been extended statewide so that everybody has a fair chance in elections. Obviously, the way it reads now is the people who are the richest have the best chance, and that won't really change. They'll still be able to spend their money. We know that. Nevertheless, that's what this is. It works in New York City. It should work in New York State. The commission was established to make sure that that was going to happen and that extension happened. Along comes Jay Jacobs, the Democrat on the commission, obviously doing a lot of bidding from other people, including the governor of New York. And they throw what's called a poison pill into all of this. And that is, we'll deal with what we were told to deal with, but we're going to put something else in. We're going to say you can't have fusion voting in New York. And what that is, David, is that if I'm running as a Democrat, I have to only run as a Democrat. I can't run on the Working Families Party. And there are people who accuse the governor of being so angry at the Working Families Party that he's getting back at them by ruining their chances to win elections. A lot of people are angry about that, including all those people you mentioned in the legislature who said, hey, this is not why we put you there. The governor seems to be backing off a little bit and saying, I took their nomination. I ran as a fusion candidate. But there are people who think that it's disingenuous and that he's the one who's responsible for this. There's very little he can do to get away with that, especially now that the legislature has indicated, hey, we are not going to go along with this. And if we have to change the law, we will. The problem is that the commission has been given the power without legislative approval to get this thing done. So what they're warning, David, is that if they do that, we're going to turn around and we're going to pass a law and change that. Interesting. Interesting in that I think the governor will probably have to back off because it's a public relations nightmare that he's trying to do this to get even. And clearly, this is something that is not working out the way that Jacobs or Cuomo thought it might. Whether or not he gets so angry that he goes ahead and does it anyway and that the commission does its damage to the Working Families Party and to the Conservative Party, we'll see.
Meanwhile, on the program today, our Karen DeWitt is reporting on mayors who are really upset about the fact that bail reform and other criminal justice laws that are set to change in the new year will basically result in an unfunded mandate. They say they don't have the resources or the money to properly carry out these new laws.
Not only the mayors, but the district attorneys, because they have to do all kinds of things to make sure that they are in compliance with the new law. And they are saying, hey, it's not that we're against it, but we need to be able to afford to hire the people that will allow us to comply with what we're being told to do. It isn't that they're fighting it on a level that they think they can win on. They are going to say, hey, you pass the laws, we'll obey them, but you got to help us pay for making all of these changes. And you're not doing it.
Well, let's hear it for this young college student, Alan. He's 19 years old. He is running for the state Senate. His name is Skylar Johnson. The 19-year-old of Mount Sinai is seeking the Democratic nomination for New York State Senate in the 1st Senate District. The 19-year-old would challenge longtime State Senator Ken LaValle, a Republican in Port Jefferson. Here's what he says. "I'm a serious candidate," Johnson says, urging people not to dismiss him because of his youth. "I want to make it clear. I'm focusing on policy. When people hear what I have to say, that will change their mind."
Well, that's true. I mean, you know, you can run when you're younger. Our own Dick Gottfried, who we know so well, came into the legislature as the youngest member of the state legislature. Now he's one of the older. He's been there a long, long time. Ken LaValle, of course, has been there for a long time, too. A major force in higher education in New York, led that committee for years and years and years. And as we know, Long Island is turning blue. It is something that was never expected to happen, but it is. So now you have a young man, a college student, saying, "I want to be the senator, I'll take him on," and getting an awful lot of headlines. And he is not the only one who is going to be involved in trying to get that nomination. But he is getting the headlines right now as a result of that. And as we know, the American people in New York State are always fascinated in saying, okay, not working this way, let's give somebody else a chance. So it's a possibility that he does it. You know, it takes a lot to know the mechanics of how to do it. You got to raise the money, you got to put people in the streets, you got to knock on doors, you got to register in the right places. So we have many students who have trouble getting to a polling place. And here's somebody who is, in fact, trying to figure it all out and running with all of those potential obstacles that he has to face. So even I say it's refreshing to see it.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartoff. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. A fourth Democrat has entered the race for a congressional seat in New York's Lower Hudson Valley. Westchester County resident Allison Fine announced late last week she'll run for the 17th district seat held by Democrat Nita Lowey, who's not seeking re-election after 16 terms. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn spoke with Fine about why she's entering the race.
"I've spent the last 15 years as a pioneer for technology for good. Through that work, I really, truly understood what the big changes are that we're living through personally, technologically, and in our communities. So I understand what's pulling us apart right now, and I understand how to put it back together. In addition, most recently, I was the chair of the National Board of NARAL, Pro-Choice America Foundation, and I want to put the economic needs and the health needs of women front and center in my campaign."
You just mentioned, you understand what's tearing us apart and how to put it back together. Maybe you could be a little more concrete about that.
Sure. So one of the big issues going on right now is that everybody is feeling economically insecure. My husband and I, we have 2 kids in college and aging parents, and for a long time we've been working independently, and everybody we know is feeling similar stresses and strains. So one of the issues that's of primary importance to me is making sure that benefits go with people, not with jobs. So everybody should be able to take not only their health care, but their retirement fund, their Social Security, their sick days with them in this very mobile economy that we have.
Fine has written 3 books on the field of online activism and is a founding board member of Civic Hall, an organization aimed at using technology for social good. And she started Innovation Network, Inc., to improve the work of grassroots organizations in areas such as homelessness, women's health, immigration, legal aid, and environmental advocacy.
"I'm ready to take on all the battles. I'm ready to fight. I'm ready to organize. I'm ready to win this race."
Fine grew up in Sleepy Hollow, where she raised 3 kids and was the president of her synagogue. The 17th district includes all of Rockland County and part of Westchester, and is considered by ratings groups to be solidly Democratic.
I think you need to be careful in a district like ours. I think you can't go too far left or too far right. I think that people want they want steady leadership. They want innovations in leadership as well. And they want somebody who represents the district. And I think I look exactly like Democratic primary voters in this district. I think I represent the energy and the interest of the women's movement that has really been energized since 2016. My campaign manager has been running an indivisible chapter near us. This next stage in our country will not be led by political parties. It's going to be led by the energy and the interests of individual activists, particularly women, who are ready for a big change. You know what? We're going to do what women always do. We roll our sleeves up and get stuff done.
And she weighs in on impeachment proceedings against President Donald Trump.
I think President Trump was impeachable on day one when he didn't divest himself from his personal companies and personal interests. And I think it is a travesty what he's done in politicizing the State Department. And I'm very glad to see Nancy Pelosi and the House Democrats taking the lead on bringing some sanity and political accountability to the presidency.
Fine joins Rockland County native Mondaire Jones, who in July announced a run. In October, State Assemblyman David Buchwald tossed his hat in the ring, followed by State Senator David Carlucci about a week later. The primary election is in June.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
Lung cancer is the top cancer killer in the U.S. However, the American Lung Association's State of Lung Cancer 2019 report finds that the burden of lung cancer varies by state. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas explains.
The report finds New York ranks above average for life-saving lung cancer screening. It's estimated that 13,380 New Yorkers will be diagnosed with the disease in 2019 alone. But fortunately, New York leads the nation for five-year survival rates at 26.4%, tying Connecticut for the best rate in the country. Elizabeth Hamlin is the American Lung Association's Director of Advocacy in New York, Massachusetts, and Vermont.
New York is definitely doing a few things right. First, getting a diagnosis that is early is key because the sooner you are detected to have lung cancer by through screening, then it is easier to treat. Now we have better CT scans and better treatment options. The options for treatment have become more targeted. If you can get in, if you're at high risk, then your survival rates are much better. And also, probably the best treatment option right now is surgery to remove the cancer. If it's caught later, your chances of having that treatment are less successful.
The report shows the nationwide five-year lung cancer survival rate is 21.7%, up from 17.2% a decade ago. Dr. Robert Zielinski is a Buffalo-based oncologist.
The most important or disturbing take-home from the report is the still very low rate of screening that's getting done in the high-risk population. I was happy to see that New York State ranks highly across the country in terms of early diagnosis of lung cancer and survivability of lung cancer. We're doing better on five-year survival rates than much of the country, but that seems to be proof of the adage that an ounce of prevention worth a pound of cure, because we've been more successful than average in getting people to quit smoking and getting away from tobacco dependency is very important. The most important thing, we'd much rather have people not getting cancer than figuring out how to find it early. But we could do even better if we could get the risk population, those who have smoked, who are of the proper age, into screening programs.
Nationwide, the rate of lung cancer between 2012 and 2016 was 59.6 cases per 100,000 people. Those rates varied by state, ranging from 27.1 in Utah to 92.6 in Kentucky. Closer to home, Hamlin says New York's neighbors are faring well. Hamlin says Vermont ranks 29th out of 51 for the rate of new lung cancer cases, but has a worse-than-average record for patients receiving no care or no treatment. The study included information from all 50 states and the District of Columbia.
In 2019, around 510 Vermonters were diagnosed with lung cancer. 22.7 cases diagnosed at an early stage. So Vermont is about 12 out of 45 for a five-year lung cancer survival rate. 23.1 of patients surviving 5 years past diagnosis.
Massachusetts leads the nation in the percentage of high-risk patients receiving screening and patients treated with surgery. The Bay State is number two when it comes to early diagnosis.
While Massachusetts is doing really well, they, of course, have a long way to go and lots of work to do. Massachusetts is ranked 28 out of 51 for the rate of new lung cancer cases, with 5,150 Massachusetts residents expected to be diagnosed with lung cancer in 2019 alone.
Zielinski is calling for more screenings.
Getting the awareness out there that we do have a screening CT capability now that is low-dose radiation exposure and has been proven effective in making an early diagnosis of lung cancer to improve survivability is very important. Those are, if you're 55 years and older, if you've had 30 years of smoking or more, and if you're still smoking or if you've quit within the last 15 years, these are people who should be getting annual screening CT scans.
The survey is available at wamc.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. A family in Altamont, New York, has loaned a powered parachute used in the 1999 James Bond film The World Is Not Enough to the International Spy Museum in Washington, D.C. The Legislative Gazette's Jesse King filed this report.
If you're a Bond fan, then you know the scene. Pierce Brosnan's 007 sports sunglasses and a popped collar while skiing in the mountains of Azerbaijan with the daughter of an oil tycoon. And suddenly, they've got company.
This isn't a social call. Head for the gully. I'll lead them into the trees. Go, go!
Four henchmen in parahawks, black motorized carts with machine guns and explosives, descend from the clouds on parachutes, throwing everything they've got at Bond from above as he hits the slopes.
When I talk to people that saw it, they say, wow, that was really exciting and everything. And to me, I was like, those things only go 25 miles an hour. He could have outrun them going down the hill easily.
Nick Vicchio and his son Nicholas designed the model for those powered parachutes in the mid-1990s. While the hook-nosed parahawks were built for battle, with skis even to convert them into snowmobiles upon landing, the Blue Heron, marketed by the Vicchio family business until 2015, was much tamer. A filmmaker himself, Vicchio says his version was intended to fly low and slow for aerial footage.
Because it's a ram-type canopy or parachute, the first thing that has to happen is for the aircraft to move forward, which launches the canopy into the air, and it inflates. Once it inflates, it takes the shape of a wing. Once the pilot sees everything's inflated, there's no entanglements of the strings or whatever, you give it throttle and it takes off just like a plane.
When Pinewood Studios reached out seeking to adapt some Blue Herons in 1999, the resulting Parahawk entered the Bond canon, and in a way, espionage history. Between 24 films, 14 books, and countless comics and video games, International Spy Museum curator and historian Dr. Alexis Alpian says Bond is bound to have an impact.
For many people, popular culture, movies, TV shows, and for a lot of people, James Bond, is kind of their entry point into learning about intelligence and espionage. They're learning about some of the language, some of the ideas. So we do recognize for a lot of people that has formed their impressions of what spying is.
Many of those impressions are way off course. While Bond dodges explosives and surrounds himself with flashy cars, menacing villains, and beautiful women downing shaken martinis, Albion says a lot of today's espionage takes place at a desk. By intercepting digital messages and analyzing satellite images, agencies can gather intelligence without sending someone into danger. Albion likens today's spies to analysts and researchers.
Once intelligence has been analyzed and packaged, it is passed on to decision makers, policy makers. They are the ones who make decisions about what to do or not to do with intelligence. In the Bond films, we usually see Bond doing all of that at once, collecting, figuring it out, and then making his own decision as to what to do.
The International Spy Museum is in the process of making some decisions itself. The nonprofit moved into a new building by the National Mall in May and is still working out when and where it will feature the Parahawk in its exhibitions. Vicio says his aircraft is the last one in the U.S. He's only flown it twice since the world is not enough. The added body around the airframe, he admits, makes it a little scary to pilot, and he's eager to avoid a view to a kill. But it's still bittersweet to see it go.
It's a little melancholy because it's kind of been around for almost 20 years with us, and but it's very exciting to have it go down to D.C. So we're pretty excited, and we'll be going down to the opening of the exhibition once it's up and running.
You can see photos of the contraption at WAMC.org. Reporting from Altamont, I'm Jesse King.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1947. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time. For more news on New York State government and politics, for the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Giustino.